And even more so, he's the best player in the world right now, and that gap between him and the next best player is starting to widen, and that just shows you his dominance right now.
I mean, I know that Anthony Edwards dropped 44 on Sunday in that 115-107 loss, but look at what he's done in games 3 and 5. Like, he had 19 points on 8 of 15 shooting in Game 3, which was a 117-90 blowout loss. And last night he had 18 points on 5 of 15 shooting in that 112-97 blowout. So the point is, as great a player as Anthony Edwards will be, I feel like when they had that 2-0 lead going back to Minnesota, that's when a bell went off in Denver with that Nuggets team. And you knew the Nuggets were not just going to go down without a fight. Now, what you didn't realize is they would win both games in Minnesota, win 3 straight, and now on the verge of finishing off the T-Wolves in 6.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd say the Edwards, the fact that he went 5 for 15 yesterday, that's a credit to the defense that Denver threw at him. You watch Edwards, as soon as he gets the ball, they double team him. He's facing double teams left and right. And now the game plan yesterday for Denver was, okay, let's blanket Anthony Edwards, make everybody else around him beat him. And the guys like Kat, he was better yesterday, way better than he was Sunday. But then they had a bad Gobert game down the stretch. And then down the stretch, it's like Nikhil Alexander Walker's taking some tough shots. So, no, I like Naz Reid down the stretch in crunch time moments. I think he needs to play a little bit more for this Minnesota team. And I think Minnesota's not done yet. I want to see this one go to 7. I think Denver pulls this one out in 7. I picked the Minnesota Timberwolves before the series started, and I didn't feel great about that. Denver just proving to us time and time again why they're the best team and why Jokic is the best player in the world.
We'll talk more about that later in the show. Also, I want to get to, in our 6 o'clock hour, a story you put up earlier today. That is the Minor Talk Offseason Basketball Podcast. You had a chance to sit down with Joe Golding. You talked to Otis Frazier III. You talked to David Terrell Jr. You talked about everything. You talked about what they did last season, their schedule, their upcoming this season. Busy, busy podcast. You have clips to play. We'll do that coming up today in our 6 o'clock hour.
Yeah, it's really interesting and insightful stuff. I mean, Joe Golding reveals stuff on the record about schedule making for UTEP basketball, what they're looking for with the final scholarship, the busy summer that's ahead, which some really interesting stuff, like a possible international series that's going to be happening in July. So, yeah. You can hear from head coach coming up here, or check out the podcast channel wherever you listen to podcasts.
You don't have to pay $7-$8 a month to get this content either. This is free, delivered to you now. His point is, that's exactly the way we like to do it. We don't give you a paywall to have to worry about. Everything we deliver here on this radio show is free 99. It's the way it should be.
Yeah, and no coach asked me for any questions beforehand. So there you go, too.
Oh, really? You mean you did this all on your own?
Did this all on my own. So, yeah,
really?
The coach did not want to necessarily tell me what we should say on this one.
So you didn't have any, no guidance, no nothing. This was all you in terms of trying to let everybody who listens to this podcast know how the interview with the coach goes.
Yeah, isn't that kind of crazy? I mean, yeah, don't those things not happen as much anymore?
I mean, really? Wow, that's a crazy situation. I mean, I can't believe you conducted a coach's interview where you actually asked the questions and weren't told beforehand what to ask. That's really good. Anyway, that is up right now wherever you can listen to 600 ESPN El Paso On Demand. We'll play that in our 6 o'clock hour. Up next, Jay Jaffe talking baseball and beer. A little bit later, fantasy talk with Jeff Erickson. Great to have you aboard here as sports talk continues after Charlie 1 and this traffic update. Didn't you hear on sports talk? Time to talk a little baseball and beer right now with this man. He is Jay Jaffe from Fangraphs.com. You can follow him on Twitter and X at J_Jaffe. Welcome back. It's good to have you back on the show, especially as we are now midway through the month of May. Hard to believe, but the season is flying by. You held a Fangraphs chat yesterday. You also wrote about all the Giants injuries that we're dealing with, and some good stuff this week on Fangraphs. I like the Joe Adele article because that's a good storyline as well. And here we are, It's been a strange season, to say the least, for Major League Baseball. It really has. Not to mention the newest story that just broke today. 10 games for Ronel Blanco, who earlier threw a no-no for the Astros for having a sticky substance in his glove.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise. You know, I don't think we know enough to say that Blanco's no-hitter was tainted by that, because, I mean, he was being examined by umpires multiple times in that game. But suddenly it popped up, and he's going to take a little vacation. And, you know, what's really surprising, actually, is that he's been the most effective Astros starter to this point, with an ERA in the low twos. And, you know, this is a team that's had just about all of its other starters have been on the injured list at one point or another. Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, now J.P. France.
Yep.
Blanco has been, he leads the team in starts and in innings, and nobody could have seen that coming based on his history. But and he's been very effective thanks to his changeup. But obviously, if he was doing something, with the sticky stuff that affected his performance, he's going to be in trouble. He's not going to be able to replicate that. It's going to be a tougher road for the Astros.
And we don't even know what that stuff is. Somebody said that they thought it could have been rosin and water in his glove, which I guess is a no-no. You know, you're supposed to be able to use your pitching hand to grab the rosin bag, and obviously if you've got some sweat, that's the mixture that you'll get to get a little bit of a better grip, but you're not supposed to take rosin and mix it with anything and then keep it in your glove and be able to go to it whenever you want.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is something the league has been cracking down on for a few years now. It was described by the umpire as the stickiest stuff I've felt on a glove since we've been doing this. So I do have to wonder if he had, he and whoever else, probably an equipment manager or whatever, had come up with something that we haven't seen before, and if there are others out there using it. But, you know, I do think it's interesting. All this is happening at a time when, you know, there's been renewed talk about, concern for the state of pitching and the state of starting pitching especially. And I saw that Max Scherzer was talking about wanting Major League Baseball to come up with a substance that would be legal, that could help pitchers grip the ball better, not necessarily to get a performance advantage, but just to grip the ball, because there's thinking that the efforts to spin pitches and gripping the ball more tightly to load up for velocity are contributing to the proliferation of arm injuries we're seeing.
Why can't they just use tacky baseballs like they use in Japan? Balls that are already coming out of the box tacky, so you don't have to rub it up with Mississippi mud or anything else.
Yeah, you know, that's something that Scherzer and others have called for. I'm not sure exactly what's taking Major League Baseball, which after all does own about 25% of Rawlings, the supplier of the baseball, is so long, but that really is kind of the grail for them, would be to get to something where they don't need to rub up the baseballs, that they have a certain tackiness built into them, and that can help them with their grip. That's been the number one complaint for pitchers is the reason that they're using the sticky stuff is because with all these minor changes in manufacturing, they have come across the baseballs are getting tougher to grip for them. And
the Mariners,
we all thought that the Astros and Rangers and Mariners 500 or better in the AL Central, three teams 500 or better in the East.
Yesterday, with his injury and the injuries, the team is soon from an IL stint. They're 6 under .500. They're 10 back already of the Dodgers. And, the Giants, it's one thing to underperform when you're healthy. It's something different, though, to struggle when you're missing many of your key components.
Yeah, I mean, they just had this insane run of injuries. They lost 7 players, including 5 starters in their lineup, in a 10-game span. Multiple catchers going down, multiple concussions, multiple crashes into the center field fence. The Lee injury is the most serious. It sounds like he's headed to Los Angeles for a second opinion with an orthopedic surgeon, and that may well mean that surgery is in the offing, and if so, it could threaten his availability for the rest of the season. But it's just bewildering, and it's, you know, it's had an impact because it's taken out a couple of the only hitters of theirs who are performing above average, Patrick Bailey, the catcher, being one of them. He's back in the lineup now, but he had a concussion, and they're being very careful with him for understandable reasons here. Lee had kind of he'd picked it up a little bit, but he's still underperforming, less so due to you know, being overwhelmed by major league pitching, and more so it just looks like, you know, based on the Statcast numbers, that he's just not getting his money's worth. He's hitting the ball harder than it looks for somebody slugging 331 or whatever it is. His Statcast expected numbers are right where we projected that he would be, and the Giants seem pretty happy with the way he's played overall. So, you know, I expect that to sort itself out if he does come back and is able to play. But it's a tough set of blows for them.
Jay Jaffe joining us from Fangraphs.com as we continue. You know, I was looking at the National League standings a little while ago. Do you realize that through the middle of May, only 6 out of 15 National League clubs have a 500 or better record right now?
Yeah, it's wild. I was actually just talking about that on another radio spot. I mean, I think, you know, the NL Central, we all thought it was going to be, everybody's going to be around 500, but we've got two teams that are very, look very strong right now, and the Brewers and the Cubs, and the Reds and Cardinals have been shockingly bad. A lot of injuries for the Reds, a lot of just disappointments for the Cardinals. Over in the East, the Mets have been, I think, worse than advertised. The Nationals seem to be putting it together, you know, over in the West, the Diamondbacks, last year's pennant winners, are below 500. The Padres are again below 500.
Yep.
I don't think we need to say anything about the Rockies. We could just assume they're going to be below 500 for the next several years here.
By the way, I was wrong. I said 5 out of 15 teams, because you're right. The Padres are one game under at 22-23. So only 5 out of 15 teams right now above 500. Nobody's at 500, which is just wild when you look at the National League and how those standings shape up. More with Jay as we keep things moving, but first, let's head over to Michael Plundo, standing by with this bottom of the hour SportsCenter update. It might take 4 or 5 years before you finally put it together. There's precedent for that. It's happened before, and although we're still a long way to go until this season is over, that could be the case with Joe Adell, who has always been a potential five-tool prospect, Jay, but couldn't figure it out, struck out too much, didn't make enough contact for his first couple trips to the big leagues. Now, though, it seems like he's finally putting it.
Yeah, he's made some adjustments I think have really helped him, and maybe it was the regime change in Anaheim that keyed it here. He's cut down on his strikeout rate. He was striking out well above 30%. He still doesn't walk much. He's a free swinger, but he is less focused on trying to cover the whole plate and more focused on trying to cover the areas that he can hit the ball harder, which is more down, more in, and having some success here. And you know, this is a guy who has been trying to find the recipe for success at the major league level since 2020, and he's been up and down to the point where, after playing 88 games with the team and really struggling in 2022, he played just 17 games for the team last year. The unexpected Mickey Moniak breakout of the former number one pick, who they got in a trade from the Phillies, really bit into his time. But he's kind of trying to replicate what Moniak did, which is a former first round pick who had really never broken through, finally putting himself up and down at age 25. So it's given Angels fans something to watch, something to hope for. Right now things are bleak. They're 15-28, and without Mike Trout, and obviously Shohei Ohtani is playing just down the road in Los Angeles. So it's a tough time for them.
It really is. By the way, I'm happy yesterday. He's got a .361 batting average that's leading the bigs. He's got a 1.107 OPS. He has 61 hits, 12 home runs, tied for second doubles, tied for most in the majors. You know, I really was thinking that with all the controversy surrounding Ohtani and his former translator to begin the season, that it would take its toll on him as we were getting under exactly the opposite. He switches translators, and now he is doing things at an incredible pace, even for him, as he's showing the Dodgers, you know, he was worth every penny of that $70 million they're paying him this over these 10 years kick in.
Yeah, it's been a thing to behold. He struggled for his first week or so, but then he got going, and lately he's been just absolutely unstoppable. I mean, the numbers, you know, he leads the majors in our WRC plus stat, .211. Second ranked guy is Marcell Ozuna at .189. So Ohtani's well ahead of the pack. I mean, this is just it makes you wonder how if he would be this strong a hitter consistently if he weren't pitching. Which is not to say that I wish he weren't pitching, because I mean that to me is the unicorn aspect of what we get out of him. But yep. Right now he is just on an absolute tear, hitting .447 in May, and that's before you factor his slugging percentage. It's just unreal, night after night, just doing damage all the time.
I said $70 million. It's actually $20 million over 10 years, because he's going to be getting $680 million of that $700 million
right.
Deferred. Which again, yeah, I would say that $2 million a year contract is working just fine for Shohei right now, Jay.
Yeah, it's for sure.
What are you going to be writing about here in the next couple of days at FanGraphs?
I got something coming up for tomorrow on Max Fried, who's had two. Hitless outings that he was pulled from with a no-hitter in progress in the same season, which is something we rarely see. Although we've seen more pitchers pull, you know, same guy twice in one year, puts him in very select company, and just kind of taking a look at how he has improved after a really rough start to his season. Didn't even make it out of the first inning in his first start, but now is looking a lot more like.
Question before I get your beer pick of the week. Yesterday we interviewed Kevin Baker. He's got a brand new book out on the history of baseball in New York. A terrific first part of a two-part book. He goes from basically the 1860s all the way up to the second part released in a couple of years that goes from 45 all the way to the present. So that being said, I asked this question to him. I'll throw it to you. If you could go back in time, let's just say Jay Jaffe discovers the time machine, and you could go back to any era ever for New York baseball and watch it right there firsthand, which era of New York baseball would you pick and why?
Oh, you know, I think that's actually pretty easy. I think the golden era of New York baseball that happened from 1947 to 57, when the Dodgers, you know, starting with the Dodgers bringing in Jackie Robinson, and then speeding up the integration process with the addition of Roy Campanella, Don Newcomb, at a time the Yankees were the powerhouse, and they brought in Casey Stengel to manage, and then came up with Mickey Mantle. And the Giants came up with Willie Mays. I mean, just to see all three of those players in New York City, at their early best,
yeah,
would be, I think, a lot of fun. Those three teams were dominating the scene: Dodgers and Giants in the National League, and Yankees powerhouse in the AL. And they met up in the World Series in that 11-year span. I don't know how many times, but it was more often than not.
I can't disagree, but at the same time, I was wondering if watching Ruth in person, especially with Gehrig and that team in 27, would have factored in, and just wanting to go back and actually see Babe Ruth and realize what he did to baseballs for such a long period of time in the 20s.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's an argument to be made there as well. I think I favor the post-integration brand of baseball, and
yeah.
You know, with Mays and Robinson there. But you can. It's one of those things you can argue about all day long.
Good stuff. All right, wrap it up. Beer pick of the week, Jay. What are we going to
one from Torch and Crown Brewing here? I just ordered a case of beer from them, and they had a promotion going on. And for some reason, I didn't get the discount I was supposed to get. And so as a make good, they gave me an extra four-pack with my order, including a beer that they had not actually released or was not currently available on the site. It seems to be available now, which helps me to describe it a little bit better. This is their Shook Ones Citra IPA. They'd put together this four-pack for me, and they couldn't have guessed any better if they knew what I liked here, because Citra IPA is just so much in my wheelhouse. This has got a nice bright citrus notes to it, hazy IPA, very little bitterness, and tangerine-y flavor. I really like this beer. I'm going to have to order another four-pack of it just to get it back.
Terrific. Jay, as a little extended bonus, we did get a Pinky chimed in on the app during our conversation about Ronel Blanco, and it's an interesting topic and take, and I want to throw it at you before we wrap it up. He says, pitchers like Blanco should be suspended for 10 starts and not 10 games. In those 10 games, he might start twice. He admitted he was guilty because he's not even going to appeal. Yes, he loses money for not being in uniform, but how many times do starters even show up when they're not pitching? Just saying, never understood this rule. Everyday fielding players do hurt the team more. So thoughts on pitchers getting suspended games versus starts? Should they change it and actually look to hit them more versus for starts?
You know, if I'm not mistaken, they've upped the penalty for a second offense to like 50 games. So, this is the first slap on the wrist. I think if you get caught again, it's real big trouble. So, I think it's overly draconian to suspend a guy that long on a first offense, but a repeat offense, I can see the logic in making a longer ban stick, so to speak.
Makes sense, Jake. Good stuff as always. We'll talk to you again right back here. Hey, Jaffe, Fangraphs.com. Follow him on Twitter and X at @J_Jaffe. We'll come back, take you up till 7 o'clock here on a Wednesday at Sports Talk and 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, 10 in front of 5 as we continue here on Sports Talk. Welcome back, everybody. 505-6009, that is our telephone number, 505-6009. Middle Fingerton on Twitter and X with a giant plundo all in caps right after Michael delivered SportsCenter for us here at the bottom of the hour. A plundo sighting at this radio station. Michael's been delivering SportsCenter ever since he first arrived back here at the radio station. That was like his, kind of getting comfortable, getting back into the driver's seat. Michael, you tell me, man, there's a lot of good topics out there sports-wise. What is your topic right now that you're most interested in? And I'm wondering if it's Harrison Butker and what came out of his mouth yesterday that's causing such a firestorm around the sports world.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the Harrison Butker thing, because me and Adrian were just talking about that, and we were just a little shocked about it because, you know, Harrison Butker making those comments and even having a wife of his own and, you know, incorporating that into his statement, it raised a lot of eyebrows. And I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but there's actually a petition out there right now that people are signing to get Harrison Butker off the Chiefs.
Really?
Yes. It's like,
I did not hear about this.
It's reached like 30,000 signatures already. It's insane.
Really? Is that happening in the Kansas City area?
Yes. I think someone in the, I could be wrong about this, but I think someone in like the local area put it out because they didn't obviously like what he said, and it just got, you know, it caught a lot of attention and everybody's just signing it.
You know, I'm surprised he didn't get more of a support or a petition from Swifties, Steve. Yeah. You see how he dissed Taylor? Come on.
He did. Didn't he just refer to her as my teammate's girlfriend?
Yes. And then he referred to song lyrics from Taylor Swift.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, it's stuff like that. So he would address stuff from Taylor Swift, but he didn't say her name.
He badmouthed pretty much everybody in that commencement speech. So, you know, didn't make, I guess it just depends on where you fall in the political spectrum. Some said that Harrison Butker said it the way it is. Others call him the most evil person, not named Aaron Rodgers, in the NFL.
You know, that's funny. I don't think it was as politically charged as I thought it was more. I know that there were politics behind it, but I felt like it was very misogynistic. I felt like there were points where it's just bad taste. Like, how does he go back to the locker room while dissing people like that, where everybody in the locker room loves Travis Kelce, and you're the kicker, bro. You're the kicker. You're the guy who has to just hit the extra point and kick a field goal. I was talking to this with Alberto. Like, how are you going to be talking about certain things with men in this speech, but you're the kicker?
Even Flava Flav got into it on Twitter and X. I don't know if you saw this post, but yesterday afternoon, Flava Flav said, sounds like some players need to stay in their lanes and shouldn't be giving commencement speeches. So, but you know what the weirdest thing about the whole deal with Harrison Butker is? His mom is an accomplished physicist. Like, she is very, very established. And yet, you know, talking about how, you know, women when they graduate should just be working on being in the home and being homemakers and essentially, you know, going in that direction. It's just, I don't know. You kind of wonder where, you know, I guess if that's his thought, well, that would really not hold true to his own family.
A lot of anti-Semitic remarks sprinkled in there as well, Steve. Sexist remarks, some people are calling it as well. I mean, just all over the place. But why is Benedictine College? I guess that's who I would expect Benedictine College to get. Is like they're trying to figure out distinguished alumni. Oh, let's just get Harrison Butker. He'll probably do a good speech. Maybe not Benedictine College.
Well, he did it all. I mean, he attacked working women, abortion, in vitro, surrogacy. He also encouraged the male graduates to fight against the cultural emasculation of men.
Wow. I mean, okay, so the political sides of it, that's to each his own, right? You have your own opinion, but then again, why are you saying it at a commencement speech? Like, we're not going on here on the radio giving you 3 hours of our political thoughts here.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Anyway, but you know what? Once again, it's funny how you, first off, when was the last time a kicker actually gave a commencement speech to begin with in a college? Anybody know that one?
No. I mean, maybe Justin Tucker at UT, but probably not. They probably go with more distinguished alumni. No knock to Justin Tucker. Just
hey, man,
credit to UT.
When I graduated UT in the summer of 95, you know, gave the commencement speech at my graduation.
Who did?
Dan Rather.
I don't know who Dan Rather is off the top of my head.
Oh, my God. Seriously?
Seriously.
You don't know who Dan Rather is?
Okay, I just looked him up. Yeah,
holy
I feel dumb.
Smokes. I feel really dumb. I'm going to stop. All right. Did you know who Dan Rather was, Alberto?
No.
Of course not.
I didn't. I was just going to say, like, what do you think the owner of the Chiefs is going to say? Clark Hunt, his mom, Norma Hunt, she had an extensive career within the organization and worked for the organization as an executive. So I don't know how he's going to feel when his mom was a working woman who had lots of accomplishments in her life apart from being a mother. So it'll be interesting to see the backlash from this.
I'm sorry. I'm still thinking about the Dan Rather line.
Sorry. We didn't grow up on CBS Evening News, man.
I mean, Dan Rather was still doing the news when you guys were like kids, so it's not like he had already retired.
No, you're right. That's why, like, when I looked at it, I knew who he was.
All right. One down, two to go. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso.
Okay, it's been 25 years since I've done this. Let's see what happens. I'm scared. Shooter McGavin, this is for you. And I'm not lying to you, that is smashed. And that went pretty well. You're dead, Shooter.
Ha 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 ha.
So that is Adam Sandler, who posted that on Twitter and X through the PGA Tour. And by the way, he took the running start on the drive. You realize, again, how difficult it is to tee off with a driver with about a 3 or 4 step running start as you're getting ready to lean into a drive.
I wonder if he's being honest, if that was actually that first time that he did it. But I believe him. Dude, I actually do believe him.
On that video, you could just tell by the way that thing connected, he smoked that ball. We don't know if he sliced it, hooked it, or hit it straight. Absolutely drilled based on the sound and as you saw it leave his golf club, his driver.
Hey, Adam Sandler, sneaky athletic, plays a little pickup basketball.
Yep.
can hit a golf ball here pretty far.
I know. That's true. Well, speaking of golf, it's on the front page right now, talking about the PGA Championship at rotowire.com. That brings us to Jeff Erickson, who joins us for this weekly spot each and every week from the team at RotoWire. Jeff, welcome back. I'll ask you what I asked the boys. Have you ever tried in the last 30 years the Adam Sandler, Happy Gilmore running head start to hit a golf ball?
I think we did it one time on our golf trip. Every year I go on a golf trip with my buddies. It's like 25 years, usually in Myrtle Beach. And I think in one of our scramble rounds, we required one of the holes that you had to do that. And it was not pretty at all. It was, you know, making contact was hard enough, let alone solid contact, let alone straight.
Yeah, you're right. Would you almost want to go golfing with Adam if he can actually do that well, just to see how he runs up and crushes a ball that way?
Absolutely. I think it would be great if you had like someone that was really proficient at that, like some sort of like long drive pro. You know, sometimes you do it on a hole and all that. I'd love to see someone have to do the Happy Gilmore on it there, too. I think that would be amazing.
It would be. By the way, are you happy or unhappy with the announcement that there will be a Happy Gilmore 2 coming out on Netflix in 2026?
I think it's kind of pointless. To do it, I think it's perfect not having story 2, 3, and 4, and they were all great. So when you know, sometimes you know you think it's perfection, and it should be left well enough alone. But sometimes it works out pretty well anyhow. But the most sequels, it's usually a bad idea.
Jeff, when it comes to the PGA Championship. Should we just pick Scottie Scheffler? I mean, we talked about it off air right now. The top three are the guys to look at right here. But for Scottie Scheffler, look at what he's done in the past five tournaments. One at the RBC, one at the Masters. Could make it 2 for 2 in majors this season if he does it this weekend and join a list of only 6 players, which includes guys like Arnold Palmer and guys like Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth to do it for back-to-back majors.
It's hard to pick against him. It's also hard to bet him. I mean, your betting odds are so low, and if you use him in DFS, he's over 13,000. And usually, you know, out of a $50,000 budget, when you have 6 golfers to do like on DraftKings, I mean, I think it's hard to find value, but it's hard to go against too. If you know what I'm saying, I think I will at least try to fund one lineup build with him in it. The thing is, if you're looking at it from a betting standpoint, you're essentially saying I'm not going to bet on any of the other favorites because you're just not getting betting value with that. You can pair them up with some like other long shots or something of that nature, but anything else, I feel like you're having a hard time finding value if you bet multiple favorites.
I wonder about a guy like Rory McIlroy. I mean, he won this, same course 10 years ago. He's mm-hmm. always consistent. He's one of those guys that usually always finishes in the top 10, just doesn't win. So I wonder what kind of odds you could get if you want to play Rory this weekend.
You know, they're not. You know, he's won 2 tournaments in a row, so you're not going to get great betting odds on him either. You know, probably worse odds than you usually are getting. I'm trying to pull up the latest that we have. It's RotoWire. One thing we do have is the latest PGA Championship odds. So, like the best odds you can find, win odds for Rory are at DraftKings, where he's 750, so 7.5 to 1, basically. It's not a great return on your investment there, but you know it's still as good as it gets. But Scotty, by the way, is 4.5. So I mean, you're getting less than $100 on your $20 bet there. It's like it's pretty tough to kind of find a good value there. But he's playing well. Rory's a weird one here too, because there's a lot of like the. Maybe he's free and clear of the board. You know, he tried to get back on. They wouldn't get him on, so he's motivated. But he filed for a divorce on Monday. I hate to dive into players' personal lives, but, my goodness, it's right there in front of us. It's hard not to pay attention to that.
He's been on fire since the divorce. So maybe that's probably been going on for a while, and he's playing great golf. So who knows?
Yeah.
Who's your pick? If you had to pick one golfer that you like to win the PGA Championship, who is it?
I'm with Adrian. I'm going to go Brooks. I think there's an if it works, then you're getting enough of a return on your investment too. I mean, I'm going to be it'll be foolish to bet against Scotty, but I mean, I want to try to find a way to have it be worth something. You know, trying to pick up straight up winners is a tough business in such a big field. but I think it's going to be a very top-heavy field. Like, I don't feel like there's a whole lot of guys are going to, you know, that are having like 30-1 odds or higher that have a much of a chance of winning. I mean, there's a reason why they're at such steep odds to begin with.
Will Tiger make the cut?
No, I think the course is playing longer than ever, and I think that's going to come back to bite him in one particular, like, it'll be like one hole. Like, it's like a 240-yard par three. I mean, for me, I can't even get there with the driver sometimes.
Yeah, that's rough. That is rough. All right, before we talk baseball and come back from the break, I know Michael Plundo, who's with us, has a NFL question for you. Michael, why don't you fire away right now at Jeff?
Hey, Jeff, moving away from golf and baseball here, but got a football fantasy question for you. What player do you think right now that is being overlooked that can make some noise when football season comes around fantasy-wise?
Did you get a chance to hear that one, Jeff?
Unfortunately, no, I didn't come through
at all. So that mic doesn't work. He wanted to know, overlooked player that could have an opportunity to maybe be somebody to jump on in terms of fantasy football for 2024.
Okay, so I just put together a set of top 20 by position rankings for Fantasy Index magazine. They always have a series of guests. So overlooked, kind of digging deep. My go-to that I've gone with a lot that I'm pointing to is Kamani Vidal for the LA Chargers. I don't love the Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins running back combination in L.A. I think the Chargers, meanwhile, have spent a lot on that offensive line, including their first overall pick. Vidal's an interesting rookie out of Troy. You know, whenever they were playing like schools, he crushed. You know, unfortunately, like, you know, Troy has, you know, a subpar offensive line, so they'd face an SEC school, and he'd be trapped in the backfield a lot. So you saw a lot of, like, separation with his numbers. He'd either have a 200-yard rushing game or like a 75-yard rushing game, because just finding a lot of harder sledding there. But I like Vidal's chances to play and get a chance to contribute right away. If you're looking for a starting running back who I think is maybe being underdrafted, I'd look to Vegas and go with Zamir White. You know, Jacobs is gone, and Vegas didn't really spend big resources to find anybody to compete with White, including in the draft. So I think I like White's chances of being a heavy-use running back this year.
All right, more with Jeff, and we'll talk a little baseball when we come back. But let's get back to Michael Plundo. He's standing by with this bottom-of-the-hour SportsCenter update for us. It's interesting to see players that are riding some heaters here over the last couple of weeks. And Jeff, we've got a couple of them, guys like Talkman, that are suddenly becoming pretty viable waiver wire requests.
Yeah, they sure are. And in a lot of 12-team leagues, he's available. Talkman was even available in one of my 15 teams this week with a note. I think his previous manager dropped him the week before, thinking, okay, maybe with Seiya Suzuki back, Talkman wouldn't play as much, but he is playing a lot. I regret I only got him in a couple of leagues and not like five or six of them, because he's on fire. That's been kind of a story for me lately. You know, it's hard finding good, difference-making hitters. You know, a lot of the prospects that have gotten the call haven't made that impact yet. I'm looking at you, Heston Kjerstad, or any Oriole prospect that didn't start the year at the team. Jackson Holliday, same thing. You could look at Kyle Manzardo in Cleveland, hasn't had that big impact yet either. It's tough finding impact free agent bats.
Rooker is on a major heater if you look at what he's done these last couple of weeks in Oakland.
Absolutely. And, you know, the power has always been there. He had a stretch like this last year, too. The batting average is the thing I'd expect to drop, but I think he's a good candidate for 30 homers this year.
You know who else I like that is not getting a ton of talk? Unfortunately, it's all the pitchers in Pittsburgh, but O'Neill Cruz is bouncing back, and he's got 4 home runs in his last couple weeks.
Yeah, and it's fun to see that. And O'Neill Cruz, I mean, patience was required here. He only played, 7 games last year and got hurt, so it follows that it might take some time for him to get up to speed. I mean, this is a guy that was an unfinished product last year. You know, he's not going to be doing the development at the plate while trying to rehab an injury, so it makes sense. But, yeah, he's still a ton of raw talent, a little older than people realize. He's not like L.A. De La Cruz at 22. He's older than that. He's like 25, 26.
Yep.
So he kind of needs to get going. But, you know, the Pirates have this, like, core set of players that are interesting. They just need more interesting players to build around instead, you know, in addition to those guys. They got thumped by Milwaukee today, and, you know, it was piled off on Martin Perez.
Eddie Rosario was having one of the worst first 6 weeks of his life, and then all of a sudden he gets hot and has four home runs in his last few weeks, eight RBIs. He's batting .364, and I guess luckily for fantasy owners, he's on Washington, so he'll continue to get some playing time.
Well, they've got Lane Thomas out right now, so that's one of the reasons why he's getting that playing time. Be aware, though, Thomas is going to come back at some point, and James Wood is knocking down that door soon. So outfield playing time is going to be a little tighter come in the near future, and that puts both Rosario, Nick Senzel, and even you know, Jesse Winker at a little bit of risk to lose some of that playing time for those guys, either returning or making their debut, respectively.
Is Luis Gil somebody that could become you know, the player to own for the Yankees rotation this year?
I think he's a good player to own. I don't think he's the, but you know, good strikeout rate. I worry about the walks from time to time. But I worry about his ability to work deep in the games. But I think he can contribute and be pretty pretty helpful for us.
Yeah, he really has. By the way, Seth Lugo has been terrific also in Kansas City. Lugo is one of those strange guys because he hasn't always started, but when you give him an opportunity to pitch, especially with a very low-risk situation like Kansas City, he could turn out to be a pretty nice arm for you.
Yeah, and he really started that showing those signs last year with San Diego. If you see what he did over the second half, he was fantastic. I think that was a really good signing. I'm more a little bit surprised that Michael Wacha is doing as well as he did. He pitched well yesterday for the Royals against the Mariners too. And you know, it's been a godsend for the Royals too, just to have two veterans like that just eat up a bunch of innings. They struggled to do that last year. Their starting pitching was awful last year, and it's having a spillover effect too. Because not only are they getting all those, you know, are they getting quality work from those two, but it's easing the burden on that bullpen, having them throw fewer critical innings. It's been good all around for them.
Saw Nick Lodolo was placed on the 15-day IL from the Reds, and he doesn't think it's going to be a long stay. Once again, a lot of injuries as guys just continue to get placed on the IL.
Yeah, and for the Reds in particular, every day it's a new injury, new problem there. They had a brief reprieve yesterday with six runs and a win. Hunter Green pitched great. Lodolo goes in the IL today. You know, India's banged up. They rested Ellie De La Cruz and scored one run. Good times. Yeah, I'm not a Reds fan that's grumpy or anything like that. I don't know why you'd think that.
I saw a story from Jesse Rogers on ESPN.com earlier today about load management in Major League Baseball, that it's coming. Mm-hmm. And as Jesse writes, it's going to be the next big thing in MLB, just like it's been in the NBA. This is not what fantasy baseball owners want. To take guys like Marcus Semien, who never takes days off, and one of the reasons why they're so coveted when it comes to fantasy baseball.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's already here in most instances. I mean, we've been doing load management with pitching for a long time. You witness all the pitch counts. Witness the third time through the order revolution. I think it's not a surprise that it spills over to the hitting side of things here too. That there's more science behind this as opposed to like, he needs a day, right? I think that's the difference. Is we're relying less on manager intuition and more on a little bit of the research behind all of this.
I guess I'm just upset because guys like Chris Bryant, who can't stay healthy, it's not so much the fact that he keeps crashing into walls a la Mike Trout. How about just not putting some guys in the outfield where they're so prone to get injured and start putting them at first base, which is going to save his, save him from getting hurt all the time?
Yeah, that's absolutely a factor there, especially with certain players that you feel like they're playing out of position or maybe they're a little bit historically fragile. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
I mean, Byron Buxton. I mean, the Twins tried that, though. I mean, the Twins used Buxton as a DH almost all of last year. Did it help? Not really. And that's the thing that makes it so tricky is that, you know, teams are trying these methods. Look at the Marlins with Yuri Perez, a pitcher, and, you know, shutting him down in season like they did. It didn't work. He still got Tommy John anyhow.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, I don't think we have a full You know, we're trying to figure out the science behind this, but we can't find a full way to keep pitchers healthy. I don't know if we're going to be able to do so with hitters either.
Tell me what you have up on the website. We've talked about a lot of things today at rotowire.com. What would you like to profile?
You know, if you're trying to jump in the last moment here for the PGA, you know, it's always for the majors. We have all sorts of coverage from our golf crew there, both from a DFS as well as a gambling angle. So you go to rotowire.com/free, check it out, get that free trial. If you want to jump into a DraftKings contest or you've got a majors pool that you're in, we can help you out with that. So rotowire.com/free.
Good stuff as always. Jeff, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for the time.
You bet. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Adrian.
There he is, Jeff Erickson, folks, from RotoWire, as we continue here on the show. 19 in front of 6. NFL schedule release. It's coming. Have you actually done the math and figured out how much money you would pay if you wanted to subscribe to all the streaming services to get every single NFL game? It'll blow you away. We'll give you that number next as we continue. Sports Talk at 600 ESPN El Paso. Forty-nine past the hour as we continue. So the NFL sent out a press release earlier today that Netflix has teamed up with Skydance Sports and NFL Films in association with Stardust Frames Productions for an upcoming documentary series that will tell the definitive story of Jerry Jones and his unique journey in transforming the Dallas Cowboys franchise, leading a historic set of players and coaches to 3 NFL titles in the 90s and searing his imprint into the global sports business landscape. I'm reading this exactly the way they wrote it. Along the way, Jones has become one of the most innovative and influential leaders in sports, with the Cowboys being the most valuable sports franchise in the world. This will be a 10-episode series on Jerry Jones. 10 episodes exploring America's team through never-before-seen footage and interviews with longtime Cowboys owner, president, and general manager Jerry Jones, as well as some of the all-time great players of the 90s, such as Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, and Deion Sanders, and head coaches Jimmy Johnson and Barry Switzer, as well as political and pop culture figures such as former President George W. Bush and Nike founder Phil Knight. Guys, this, I mean, look, if it's really going to be a definitive documentary and it's truly going to tell the story, then it absolutely should tell everything. All the stuff that's happened with Jerry off the field, all the things he's been, you know, that people have seen with him. Not to mention the fact that they haven't really, I mean, they might still be America's team in terms of value of the franchise and popularity. This team hasn't done anything in the postseason since 1996, for crying out loud. So if you ask me, this will be a really interesting series to see if it takes or if this will be a 10-episode fluff piece that will be done through the eyes of Jerry Jones. I'm so interested to see how this is going to come out.
This is probably going to be the fluff piece, right? Because there's not a lot, in my opinion, that he would actually clear if it's, you know, against him.
I don't need 10 episodes to watch Jerry Jones. Give me one. Give me one 2-hour. Give me one 2-hour thing, and that's enough. I mean, I'll ask you guys, okay? I'll say this. I'll take Happy Gilmore 2 on Netflix over a 10-part docuseries on Jerry Jones, if it's done the way I think it's going to be done. Reactions. Go ahead. Oh, jeez. That's all I needed to hear. That's it. I asked Alberto for his reaction. He choked on his spit, and he's done. Just like that. That's the end of Alberto. Michael, what about your reaction?
I think it's a very interesting one. You know, for Jerry Jones, obviously, you know, a lot of people have their own opinions about how they feel about him based on his, you know, tenure with the Cowboys. But I think it's interesting to see, you know, how a businessman becomes an, you know, owner of an NFL team. I think it's always good to see the transformation and evolution of that.
How are we going to spend 10 episodes on this? I mean, honestly, that's what I'm thinking. I don't disagree with what you're saying, which is why I think 2 hours would be more than enough. I mean, look, let's put it this way. I'm used to the HBO documentaries from the 80s and 90s. I mean, they spent an hour on Babe Ruth, right?
and you're going to give me 10 episodes on Jerry Jones? Like, what can they possibly show over the course of those 10 episodes that are going to keep you completely, you know, glued to your smart TVs?
I feel like pre-pandemic, it was all 30 for 30s, and we all knew it. It's maybe a one-parter. In the case of the Celtics versus the Lakers, you got a three-parter, but that's the most. And then it was The Last Dance. And then everybody's now trying to copy The Last Dance and trying to do a multi-part docuseries for everything, including the Dynasty docuseries that was on Apple TV Plus that you know, portrayed the Patriots and talked about all that. It's all fluff, man.
All right. Are you okay now?
Yeah, I think I'm fine now. But
all right. How would you? What was your reaction? I know what your reaction was, but what do you think?
I think that this is laughable coming from the Cowboys when you know they were giving him all his flowers and painting him to be this all savior and stuff. But when you really think about it, someone could make a serious argument that Jerry Jones has his hand directly in that the Cowboys haven't had any playoff success. So that's what I find funny is you paint him out to be the savior who is a businessman and extremely savvy, but he doesn't know when to step away from what he loves to let someone who actually knows how to do it so that they can have success. You could pretty much argue like in the last 30 years, he's destroyed this franchise and their playoff hopes, but no one's going to say that. So yeah, this is just a Jerry, I'm pretty sure. I don't even like seeing him when they pan to his face on TV. I can't even imagine 10 full episodes of him.
I know. I'm telling you, this is, and you wonder, but here's the thing, okay? He's a polarizing figure. So if it's done honestly, right, and we get to see both sides of it, then I'm interested. I just have a feeling they're just going to glance over all the stuff that a lot of people would find interesting, and I'm just trying to figure out exactly what they're going to do for 10 episodes.
Yeah, again, you're going to lose my interest after episode 2. I mean, I think all these long docuseries, you have to keep people entertained. My MJ, The Last Dance, of course, it's entertaining. It's the greatest, arguably the greatest player of all time in NBA history.
And a very, very good series because it took us back in time, and I just loved the way they portrayed everything. I thought they did a great job with that. I really do. All right, 2 down, 1 to go. When we come back, Adrian sat down with members of the UTEP basketball team on a special Minor Talk off-season podcast that is streaming now wherever you get your podcast for 600 ESPN El Paso. We'll play some clips. We'll talk about it next as Sports Talk continues. AM, Moda Mia. Folks, you want authentic Mexican cuisine? Where they bring food in from all parts of Mexico and deliver an experience like you're just not going to find around El Paso. You feel like you're in Puebla. You're in other parts, Mexico City, so many great areas, Jalisco. And they've got it done. $50 to Moda Mia for just $25. They're located on Motwood near George Dieter. And Adrian, once again, another terrific dining deal coming up this Friday at 10 a.m.
Yeah, good opportunity. If you like Moda Mia, well, now you can get it for $50. If you've never been out there, only $25, and then you get a $50 gift card to try a new restaurant that's one of the top up-and-coming restaurants here in El Paso, especially on the east side. If you're an east sider, you probably already know. I'm jealous of you east siders, the fact that you have Moda Mia right in your backyard.
Oh, my God. You're not kidding. But again, that is all happening. 600ESPNElPaso.com. Search dining deals, and you will be able to hook up with Moda Mia. So the NFL has released the 2024 NFL schedule. It kicks off on Thursday, September the 5th, 6:20. That game will get going with the Ravens at the Chiefs out in Kansas City. It's going to be on NBC. And that's the start of everything. I mean, look, as we said earlier, they've got games on Peacock. They have games on Prime Video. They have games on Netflix. They have games on Amazon as well. Prime Video. They've got games on ESPN. They've got games everywhere, Adrian. That's just what it comes down to. There's going to be it's going to be a little different with the NFL because they are trying to use every possible network and streaming service they can provide all these games.
Okay, here's a couple facts for you, Steve. The NFL has games on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this year. No games are currently scheduled on Tuesday. However, this has happened in the past because of scheduling issues. They've done it. What I want to throw at you is when I was looking at the schedule release, the Kansas City Chiefs will play on almost every day of the week this season. They'll play on Monday. They'll play on Tuesday or Wednesday. They'll play on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then 12 games on Sunday.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. And by the way, in case you're wondering why Wednesday, well, that's Christmas Day. So there are your Wednesday games. I mean, normally we don't have games on Wednesdays, but it is Christmas Day, so we will be getting games. In fact, crazy enough, we got a Monday night game on December 23rd. Then we've got two on Christmas Day. We've got one on the 26th, which is a Thursday. And then we've got three TBDs on Saturday the 28th and some more on Sunday. It's going to be wild.
Flexing schedule options there. Yeah, and schedule release day, I think we always have the conversation on air. Ever since I've been on here, is this a big day? And every year, it becomes a bigger and bigger day, like for football fans. Now you have social media is trending with schedule release. You have all the different clubs putting out their own video. So, yeah, I mean, this has turned into an annual event, and the NFL continues to remind us. We've got hockey playoffs. We've got NBA playoffs. We've got so much baseball. NFL rules them all.
Let's do the Cowboys schedule. Let's talk about that here as we continue. So they'll begin the season week one, Sunday, September 8th. That's going to be a 225 game at Cleveland. All of our Cowboys games are going to be on 95.5 KLAQ. Let me give you the TV games as well. That'll be on Fox coming up to start the season. That's also the Tom Brady debut, okay? Then week two, they're going to be home against New Orleans. That's an early game on Fox on Sunday, September 15th. Week three, the Cowboys are home against Baltimore. It's a Fox late game on the 22nd. Should be a real good one. And then in week four, the Cowboys find themselves playing Thursday night at the Giants on Prime Video, 6:15 kick on September the 26th. First four games, instant reaction, Adrian.
I think 2-2. I think 2-2 either way. You could tell me however you want to shake it out. I think 2-2 right there for the Cowboys.
Plundo will be excited Sunday, October 6th, because they'll be playing at Pittsburgh Sunday night. It's a 6:20 game on NBC. Michael, how do you like the fact that the Cowboys and Steelers get to have a little rivalry renewal on primetime?
I love it. You know, if you remember back in 2020 when the Steelers played the Cowboys, it wasn't really a, you know, highly anticipated matchup because the Cowboys quarterback was Garrett Gilbert, and he still nearly beat the Steelers. That game was very close. The Steelers won that 24-19. The Cowboys almost had a last-minute comeback, but thankfully the Steelers were able to hold on. So hopefully Dak Prescott will be healthy, and it'll be a good matchup.
Won't get any easier the following week. The Cowboys come back home to host the Lions. That's going to be a 2:25 kickoff on Fox for week number six. And then Dallas will have their bye week in week seven. So no game for the Cowboys coming up in week seven. Week eight coming off the bye. Dallas will be at San Fran in the 6:20 NBC Sunday night game. So right back to primetime for week eight. So we have three games, the second quarter of the season, Adrian, with weeks five, six, seven, and eight. And they were not going to be easy. San Francisco, Pittsburgh, and Detroit. That is a brutal part for the Cowboys.
I think this is the time where you say 4-4 or maybe even 3-5 for the Cowboys until their schedule starts to soften up a bit.
Maybe that'll happen the following week. They go to Atlanta to take on the Falcons. That'll be an early game on Fox, November 3rd in week 9. Then the following week, they are home against the Eagles. It's a late game on CBS. So Dallas and Philly at home on Sunday, November 10th. Then you've got Sunday the 17th. The Cowboys don't play because Monday night they're on ESPN at home against the Houston Texans. Following that, Dallas will be at the Commanders in an early game for Week 12 on Sunday, November 24th, just 4 days before Thanksgiving.
I hate their Thanksgiving game, which is their next matchup, the Giants. I hate that one. I mean, who's going to watch that one? I just have Thanksgiving dinner with your family and enjoy that instead of watching this game.
Oh, listen to you. Listen to you.
That's a terrible game.
Lane Frank's going to be watching that game.
He will be. You know. And they're going to be awful.
By the way, in case you're wondering, the Thanksgiving matchups this year, Bears-Lions, that's the early game, Giants-Cowboys, Dolphins-Packers, that's the triple header
of NFL games on Thanksgiving?
I would say it's a B minus, maybe a C plus.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
All right, then coming up week 14, the Cowboys will play Monday night at home against the Cincinnati Bengals. That's December the 9th. That game will be Monday night football for Dallas. Then they go to Carolina in week 15. They play the early game on Fox against the Panthers. Follow that up with a home game against the Bucks Sunday night on NBC. If there's one thing you should note, a lot of primetime games for America's team this year.
Yeah, and not going to be good. If this is a South season, if we're talking about Mike McCarthy, where are the odds right now? If Mike McCarthy, first coach fired in the NFL, I want to see what those odds are. Maybe sprinkle little dollars on that one if you go out to Vegas here in the coming weeks. Or, you know, I feel like for whatever reason, Steve, that Sunday, December 22nd game against the Bucks is going to be pivotal for both teams. Like, for whatever reason, if you're talking about mediocre, yep. If you're talking about trying to fringe playoff teams, whatever, that feels like a pivotal game.
Just wait, their final two games are going to be NFC East clashes. They go at Philly. That's the late game on Fox on Sunday, December 29th in week 17, and then they'll wrap the season up at home against the Commanders. That is how they will end week 18. And again, no time on that one yet. They're all going to be flexed, but what a schedule that is for Dallas for 2024. Man, oh man. Speaking of being at home, we are excited about the Cowboy home games because we'll be giving you a chance to win trips to every Cowboys game. And nobody does home better than Palo Verde Home. That's right. Edgar Montiel and the team at Palo Verde. Hey, they win awards. That's what they do. They're winning awards. Best home builder in El Paso year after year. They're also one of the top 200 builders, and they build all over El Paso. If you want a staff that knows how to build homes, over 2,000 they've built since they started in this, all over El Paso, not to mention 5 engineering degrees on staff, 2 architecture degrees on staff, and over 20 employees. It's Palo Verde Homes.
Hey, we always talk about energy efficiency. Well, how about the fact that they've been identified as Energy Star Industry Leaders by the EPA for building 100% of their homes Energy Star Certified? So we love that. We love the fact that they build in over 15 communities in this area across El Paso, the east, the west, the northeast. Don't forget about Horizon and Socorro. That's Palo Verde Homes. Check them out online at paloverdehome.com.
Excellent. All right, 33 pass. Let's get back to Mike. Michael Plundo one last time. He is standing by with this bottom of the hour SportsCenter update. Continue here on the show. Meanwhile, I'm looking at other games being played this year around the NFL. Adrian, any thoughts on some of the other schedules you've had a chance to look
at?
Yeah,
I'm looking. Of course, I got to look at the Rams. Resident Ram fan over here. Rams on the road first 2 weeks of the season. They're going to go at Detroit for Sunday Night Football Week 1. Jared Goff versus Matthew Stafford. Former players playing against their former teams. With these two guys right here, there was some graphic yesterday that was going around social media that was like comparing the numbers since the trade actually happened. Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff, and the numbers look almost identical. But I'll tell you this, Steve. What's not identical? The fact that the Rams have a ring and the fact that the Lions don't. Sorry, Sal Montes. Didn't mean to slight you there with that one. But, for the Lions fans who want to talk up Jared Goff, I just will say that, Matthew Stafford is still him, and he's still here, and he's still a top quarterback. I would say a top 10 quarterback in the NFL right now. I'm looking forward to that one. Cardinals, I don't know what to make of that one right there. And then week 3 is their home opener against San Francisco. Despite all the things I said to gas up the Rams and Stafford, I think there's a real possibility Rams go 0-3 to start off the season. Tough opponents to start off the year.
They are going to be tough opponents. Hey, by the way, I'm curious about one thing, because today was the day that the NFL released their schedule. When do seats actually go on sale?
That's a good question. I have not seen anything on – I've only seen things on suites for Vivid Seats and stuff like that.
Like, I'm on SeatGeek right now, right? And they've got seats that are in all these different price ranges now that the NFL's been released. But, Have they actually been official? Is this how the NFL does it now? They just release their tickets and they sell them on SeatGeek?
So, well, I've seen the Packers tag bookseats.com, which I guess is their ticket partner. I saw Ticketmaster actually be the one who's presenting, I think, the Falcons video, which is interesting in itself. So I think different teams have the different partners on your preferred, like, ticket, I guess, where you get your tickets and stuff like that.
Dude, I guess. I don't know. Like, I mean, and there's some decent deals, but it's not cheap. Let's put it that way. You know, I mean, if you want to go and you want to sit in a in certain sections, yeah, it's, wow. I mean, I guess, is $280 a ticket a good deal to sit in the lower level on, like, the 40-yard line?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, I get $200-plus tickets for nosebleeds in the NFL, so yeah.
What do you think, Michael? What are we talking about here? What do you think?
Well, I'm looking at SeatGeek right now for some Steeler games, and their home opener, Week 3, against the Chargers. I found some tickets for $197 in the second level, so.
Oh, that's cheap. Wow.
Yeah, I might need to jump on that.
Yeah, that's pretty good, man. That is pretty good. Well, all I know is, I mean, see, and I guess these are good seats if you look at it, but my biggest question is, if you're going to pay $300 a ticket, right, and you're going to buy these seats, what do they charge you after the, like, how much are the service fees?
Oh, service fees are through the roof, man. You're talking $40-$50.
That's not bad. Are you sure you're not talking $100 a ticket for service
fees?
Well,
I don't know, man. I don't think that's necessarily great, but I think it all ranges from different ticket providers. I mean, I'm seeing Ticketmaster advertised over here. I'm seeing SeatGeek advertised. I'm seeing Vivid Seats as well. There's all the different ticket partners, so I think it varies.
I'm looking at SeatGeek. For $200-$300 single-game tickets, they're charging $30 per ticket. That's not bad. That's 10%. That's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess it's not that bad.
I just can't spend $300 a ticket to go watch a football game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Are you?
That's
insane. Are you looking at the Jets game?
Yeah, I'm already looking at the Jet game on November 10th.
Which one do you like that you want to go to? Which is the one? Who are they playing?
The Cardinals in Phoenix.
Oh, that's interesting. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I have a hard time spending $300 a ticket to go watch the Cardinals and Jets.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I don't know. I mean, especially if the Cardinals start off awful and they have a terrible season and you can get a bargain on that as the season continues.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, this is probably the most expensive the tickets are, and then they'll start dropping once the team sucks.
Although 915 Tours will remind you, when those seats are in demand for the Dallas Cowboys, almost impossible to get cheap tickets. So it's a risk. This time you lock it in and you hope your team is good, you know, by the time you go to see them. I'm looking at the Rams schedule right now. I'm circling December 8th. I think I would love to go see Bills versus the Rams, although that's an inconvenient time for us here programming wise because we got so much going on during that point. So maybe we're looking at an October weekend when UTEP plays a lot of weekday games. So I could see that Packers game, maybe the Raiders game. They're playing the Raiders in October, but I'm definitely going to be making plans to watch the Rams this year.
Are you really? But
yeah.
And as far as spending money, by the way, I mean, here's my question. Would you go to a game and sit all the way in the top in the nosebleeds and get and spend like $89? I mean, is that even worth it? Just being in the building?
Yes, it is worth it being in the building, man. I just depending on how big of an NFL fan you are. I have done standing room tickets in the NFL and still had a great time. I've done nosebleed tickets in the NFL and even Jerry's World and had a great time. I mean, it's more about the experience, I think.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. Well, we'll see what happens. NFL schedule release. It's a fun time. And yes, now the fun really starts because the tickets are available. And I do believe that you're probably spending the most money now on schedule release day versus what you'll spend later on if the team does not perform. Now, the Jets Cardinals are going to be expensive no matter what because the Jets are coming to town. There's all the New Yorkers that live in Phoenix, and it's Aaron Rodgers. So even if the Cardinals are terrible, you're still spending top dollar for those tickets.
Right. I mean, they still get a lot of people from L.A. They get people from Vegas to go out to those Phoenix games, so makes a ton of sense. And then, of course, us here in Texas. So, yeah, I totally understand. My father-in-law gets season tickets for the Rams. So, I'm going to have to call him up.
I think you are. I think that's probably going to be a very, very good idea for you. All right, we're going to come back, wrap things up here on the show. Final Countdown next. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso.